This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana, Xiaoning and Philip. It is Tuesday, the 29th of March. Now we're turning our attention over to the Middle East because over the past 2 days, Israel has played host to a historic meeting with four Arab countries, namely the UAE, Bahrain, Morocco and Egypt. Now those first three countries, the UAE, Bahrain and Morocco, were part of the Abraham Accords brokered under President Trump that normalized their ties with Israel back in 2020. Now, U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken was also present at the meeting as part of his 5-day trip to the region.
Among the issues on the agenda of the Israeli-Arab meeting include developments on reviving the 2015 nuclear deal, as well as the impact of plunging wheat prices on the Arab world. Now, the diplomatic push by the U.S. comes amid growing concerns within Israel over the Iran nuclear deal. Iran says it believes a new deal will be weaker than the previous one, enable Iran to intensify its military activities across the region. At the same time, though, the normalization of ties by Arab states with Israel is taking place without any progress on the two-state solution for Palestine.
So will normalization become more widespread across the Middle East amid geopolitical and economic pressures? To discuss the outcome of the meeting, as well as broader dynamics in the Middle East region, we speak to Dr. James Dorsey, Senior Fellow at the Middle East Institute of the National University of Singapore. James, a very good morning. Before we get to the main outcomes of the Israeli-Arab meeting, I think it's worth noting that this is a historic event where the foreign ministers of the UAE, Bahrain and Morocco convene in Israel for the first time after normalizing ties in 2020. What drove the thawing of relations between these Arab states and Israel?
Well, what brought them together clearly is several things. First and foremost, a shared threat perception, namely Iran. But also the realization that because they've actually had relations for a very long time, they have a lot to offer each other in terms of economic and technological cooperation, and the price for that is that they effectively have set the Palestinian issue aside.
But, you know, going back to that meeting, I mean, were there any key takeaways that you noted from this Israeli-Arab meeting?
Not immediately, except for the symbolism of it. Mm. The symbolism in terms of the fact that it was held in Israel, that it was held very close to the former residence and the burial place of David Ben-Gurion, Israel's first prime minister and the man who really who played a key role in founding the state of Israel, but also played a key role in the displacement of the Palestinians. And obviously, and clearly, the Palestinian issue as such played only a backstage role.
What do you think the normalization trend that we're seeing in terms of Arab countries and Israel, their ties, what does this bode for the Palestinian cause and the two-state solution? I mean, we know that the current Israeli president, Naftali Bennett, is completely against such a resolution. Does normalization put a two-state solution further out of reach? And are we going to see more Middle East countries normalize ties with Israel?
Well, I think the question really is, what does it do in terms of resolving the Palestinian issue? Increasingly, I think privately, most people would admit that the two-state solution no longer is possible, that developments on the ground are such that the cost of a two-state solution politically, but also just practically, in terms of moving out some 700,000 Israeli settlers or making those settlers subject to a Palestinian jurisdiction, that's just simply not realistic, which means that a solution to the Palestinian problem has become even more difficult because there is only then one solution, and that's the one-state solution. So you have a situation where irrespective of what happened at the meeting in the Negev, or whether or not that meeting took place, resolving the Palestinian issue has become more difficult, and as a result, there's not even an attempt to resolve it.
Mm. So what does it leave Palestine then?
Essentially, their choices are going to be a struggle at a very heavy price, or alternatively, that they accept an economic development without the concomitant political and state development. Mm. And that's going to be a choice that, even if they do make it at this point, ultimately may not prove to be sustainable.
Turning our attention over to what's happening in Ukraine. I mean, the talks, the Israeli-Arab talks that are taking place, or that did take place, they are taking place against the backdrop of the war. How are Middle East countries positioning themselves on this, given the complex allegiances that exist between the U.S. and Russia in the region?
I think that they position them... Well, first of all, there's a divergence in the way they position themselves. You have countries like Israel and Turkey, which really feel that they, even if they wanted to, cannot go along with the international sanctions against, I mean, they'll pay lip service to it, but de facto can't go along with it because they have certain interests with Russia that they don't want to jeopardize. In Israel's case, that is, among other things, the ability to target Iran and its non-state allies like Hezbollah in Syria. In Turkey, there are multiple interests, including Syria. Now, those two have been able to manage things by positioning themselves as mediators. Mm. So you have at the moment, or about to have today, Tuesday, a meeting of Ukrainian and Russian officials in an effort to end the war. So that's been their strategy. Mm. You have at the other end of the spectrum, you have Qatar, which again hasn't wanted to irritate the Russians too much and has not imposed sanctions, has maintained or attempted to mediate, even though that never came to any real fruition, but at the same time has not drawn the ire of the United States or other boycotting, sanctioning states by trying to be very helpful in relieving Europe's energy problems, particularly with gas. Mm. And then you have countries like the UAE and Saudi Arabia, which sort of have been openly defiant of the policy to pressure Russia to withdraw from Ukraine. In one case, for example, the Crown Prince of the United Arab Emirates, Mohammed bin Zayed, made a phone call to President Vladimir Putin in Moscow and said that he understood that Russia had the right to defend its national security interests.
Okay, in the meantime, what about the Iran nuclear deal? Are we any closer? We've talked to you about this just maybe 2 weeks ago. Are we any closer to any resolution?
That's the $64,000 question. we're not... I think we're still close. But then the last mile is always the most difficult mile, and we're going to have to wait and see. But as a matter of principle... I think, you know, the Iranians and the United States have an interest in this, as do Russia, China, and the European Union. So that mitigates in favor of a deal, but it's not a deal until it's a deal, and with other words, until the fat lady has sung and it's signed. Mm.
James, while we have you on the line, could I just get your thoughts on what's happening with Syria? Because we did see Syria being isolated from the international community for quite some time. But now we do see that Arab countries are starting to bring President Bashar al-Assad back into the fold. Is that the trend now? Will Syria come back into the Middle Eastern fold despite their ties with Russia or despite what they're inflicting on their own population?
Well, what I think you're seeing is that some states would like to bring, or some Arab states would like to bring Syria back into the fold. And that's primarily the United Arab Emirates. The Saudis have been less enthusiastic about that, although also less opposed to it. Qatar's been opposed to it. Whether that happens or not, I think we're going to have to wait for the next Arab summit. I think also a lot will depend on what happens in Ukraine. Mm. Russia is no longer the force that it was, even if it still has troops in Syria.
James, thanks as always for speaking to us. That was Dr. James Dorsey, Senior Fellow at the Middle East Institute of the National University of Singapore, giving us some insights into the very complex geopolitical dynamics in the Middle East and how it's taking place against the backdrop of the war in Ukraine. Yeah. You've got your hands up shouting in, I guess.
We just finished having that very complicated discussion on the My Sajatra app, but I think the Middle East situation is far more complex going back decades, right? And what I feel really sad about is that the Palestinian solution is not any closer to any resolution. In fact, this means that according to James, the two-state solution is further and further away. So what happens to all these people?
Absolutely.
There's the humanitarian issue behind every crisis, right?
We really need to keep monitoring this issue. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.